You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's special episode, I am giving you a two-part series covering my interview with Dr. Jody Mullen. Y'all, what a fun interview. Jody is so aligned with child-centered play therapy. She has such vast experience in kids and in the child-centered approach. She supervises supervisors. She is worth listening to. And in this two-part series, we are not only discussing the child-centered model, why we love it, why it works, all of those good things that we love to talk about, but also she has extensive work and background in children who have been through trauma. And I loved the fact that she made me aware that as a child-centered play therapist, we are always working with kids that have trauma backgrounds. And it may not be our population, it may not be something that we deal with all the time with everyone, but as a child-centered play therapist, you inevitably work with children who have experienced trauma. And we need to know how to recognize that, how to address that, and best practice in the child-centered playroom. So that is part one. And gosh, it has some great stuff. We made a joke about the clinical pearls of that episode. So I hope that you will listen. I think you will find it so beneficial. And then there will be a part two coming as well. So Jody is just excited and passionate about child-centered play therapy, just like we are. And I know that you all will really benefit and be thrilled to hear from her. We just had a lot of fun. So looking forward to being able to share this episode with you. I hope that you enjoy. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks. Welcome to the Play Therapy Podcast. I'm really excited today. We have a guest interview, which I don't do often, but when I find someone that I really am excited to chat with and I'm looking forward to learning more about and what they're doing, I want to make sure that you all are aware of that too. So excited to have Dr. Jody Mullen with us today. And I know that we're going to really have some fun conversation. I've had a couple chances to chat with her and it's just been such a joy. So Jody, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And I know my audience is going to be really excited to hear what you have done in the CCPT world and what you're actively doing and things like that. So glad that you're here today.
Yeah, thank you. And what an honor. I do recognize that this is a special position to be in on your podcast. So I'm also very grateful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, if you don't mind, I know our audience would love to hear a little bit about you. So if you can just kind of give us your story and just, you know, what you're doing and where you live and things like that.
All the things. Okay, sure. So my name is Dr. Jody Mullen. I am a faculty member at State University of New York College at Oswego, where I have been teaching in the Counseling and Psychological Services Department for about 30 years. My students are school psychologists, school counselors, and mental health counselors. About the same time, I have been a clinician, a couple more years being a clinician, and a play therapist, supervisor. It's literally my love. So I must do it. So my time is really spent doing all things connected to that. So like I said, I'm a full-time professor. I still maintain a clinical caseload and a clinical practice. I do gobs of supervision. You know, when I'm bored, I write a little bit, those kinds of things. So getting that all out there. I think maybe the most important thing, and I know people who do this work have some shared experience with this, is that I had no intentions of working with children. I had no intentions of being around children. I did not like children. They did not like me when I first started out as a clinician. And what I realized was that when I took my first course in play therapy was that not just the way that we're taught, but also the way that we're socialized so interferes with our ways of connecting to children. And once I learned a child-centered approach, and I'm talking, I had about like 2.5 hours worth of class and instruction in that. It was life changing and really set the trajectory. So been doing that for a couple of decades now.
Me too, actually. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because I think you have your finger on the pulse of that. One of the most recent episodes that I have been collecting information about is a lot of my listeners and a lot of my collective members and so many of the people with whom I'm interacting, I started noticing a trend that it's a second and third career for so many people. And so I did a little unofficial poll and there's an episode to come about that. But what I have discovered, exactly what you said, it's my story, it's their story. Mm-hmm. There was usually not a bent toward either working with kids or if they had worked with kids, they never wanted to be a child-centered play therapist. And all of a sudden they were exposed to it often in very random, strange ways. Yeah. They fell into it. And one of my phrases is it finds you, not the other way around. But yeah. I really, truly believe that once you learn about kids, their needs, the way that the child-centered model approaches children and the way that it respects and understands and values kids. And I think that, I mean, I intended to work with the geriatric population and here I am working as a play therapist. So it's so consistent across so many stories where we find that there's just this resonation. And once you get it, you can't go back. And it's just this special pull and you're like forever a child-centered play therapist. Yeah.
You can't undo it. Like you just can't. And I think it's really difficult because we get pulled in. There are so many stakeholders pulling us in different directions. Oftentimes those are parents or educators, but even our colleagues, even our play therapy colleagues wind up trying to pull us in this direction to do this intervention or to follow, this program. And it takes all of the, for me, it takes the heart and the art away from what this work is all about. And something else you said, Brennan, just also really struck me is, so here I am teaching in a, graduate program that has two that are specific to working with children, school psychology and school counseling. There is no course that is specific to counseling children, unless the students take my intro to play therapy course, which is an elective. And it falls outside of what their requirements are. Mm-hmm. So they don't, we were probably in similar positions that unless we sought that out and it found us in its way, is that we didn't get that. And so many people wind up in the field working with children and don't have any foundation in working with children. And the same thing goes for the specialty of play therapy. It's like they read Dibs in Search of Self and that seems wonderful and so cool, but then it's almost like you don't know what you don't know.
Right. I use that phrase all the time because so many, especially second and third career, they're so frustrated and they're defeated and they feel that they missed a window of opportunity or I've wasted so many years of my working life. And there's all of this guilt and frustration and I think a little bit of defeat really that I should have known this when I was 25, right. Or I wish I would have been exposed to this at 30, or, if I would have started my career on this path, my whole life would have looked different than it is right now. And there's a sense of, you don't know what you don't know. And that's what I come back to all the time. But as soon as you know, it will forever change your life in the best way. And so that's kind of where we all fall, I think. And that's such a special thing, which actually leads me to my next question perfectly. I'm curious why you think the child-centered play therapist community is so special. What do you think makes specifically within the play therapy world, what makes child-centered play therapists unique and special?
Okay. Oh, this is such a beautiful question. I actually feel a little teary-eyed in about to answer is I think that in particular, the people who do this, not only do we accept children exactly as they are, which is like a tenant, right? We have to be able to do that. I think we do that for ourselves and that radiates out. And so whether I'm doing supervision or teaching or speaking to an esteemed colleague through a podcast, is that that you feel that you like, you absolutely feel that sparkle of like, I accept you exactly the way you are, because I've done that for myself. Because I don't think that you really can do child-centered play therapy. You can't give away what you don't have, right? So if you haven't done that, that's what it feels like to me. And I mean, I think it's a bit of a cliche, but we hear so often, like, you have to trust the process. And I think that's a third of it, right? So in order to do this magical work that we do as healing professionals, is we have to trust the process, but we also have to trust ourselves, and we have to trust the children that we're working with. And I think that is inherent in child-centered work, and that does make us different.
I think so too. And that actually reminds me of a conversation I had with some of my coaching participants recently. One of them brought up that the only thing that she's done differently in this last year, she completed the year-long coaching program with me. And she said, I've always struggled with some of my own issues. And I'm just to protect her, I'm not going to share what those are. But she said, look, I've always had this, and I've had treatment for it. I've had medication for it. I've been diagnosed, whatever.
All the things.
She said, and the only thing that I've changed is my child-centered knowledge, my child-centered training, this coaching program with you, really becoming child-centered in the playroom, really honing these skills. And she's like, and my issues are gone.
Yeah.
And so she says this to me, and like, I have goosebumps right now. And I'm like trying to take this in.
Right.
And then other people on the call start sharing their stories of exactly the same thing. Oh my gosh, well, I had this issue and that has gotten so much better. And I was struggling with this and this has gotten so much better. And so then, of course, their collective response is, Brenna, you need to study this. You need to see if this is a thing. And I'm like, oh yes, in my spare time, let me tackle
right.
that. But that has been in my head since that conversation. And I think that's almost exactly what you're alluding to. When we are fully child-centered and we embrace the principles and the philosophies and we live them, because it's one thing to know them, it's another to live them. And I think that when we get to the point where we live the tenets of child-centered play therapy, we can't help but be changed ourselves through that process because of all of the foundational beliefs that surround why child-centered works. And that has to be extended to ourselves. And therefore, it's healing for us.
Yes.
It's curative for us. It's helpful for us. And I think that that only extends outward when we've already done the inward work. Mm-hmm. And I think that that really is such a special piece of this.
Speak, right? Like that is exactly it. And I think that's the other thing that is really special about this particular, way of connecting to children, is that you can't only be child-centered. You can't only be person-centered in the playroom. Like that doesn't make any sense. You can't just put it on. It's a philosophy. It's a lived philosophy. It's a way of being, not something you do. And I think for a lot of people who wind up on our doorstep, so to speak, around child-centered play therapy, have already done all the do's. You know, they've tried this, they've tried that. That's not working. That doesn't exactly feel right. The kids are rejecting them. The kids are rejecting the approach, the intervention, the gimmick. To be very frank.
Be frank,
yeah.
Jody.
Yeah. Yeah. You're
in good company here.
Yeah. I mean, they're resisting like this kitschy thing that we do that like looks like a fun game, but I'm really trying to make you do something. Like children sniff that out in a second. So I think that is part of what makes this special, but makes it also something that you can't just do. It has to be in your, it has to work its way into you cellularly.
Yes, I completely agree. Oh my gosh. That was an exciting question. It makes me happy. Okay. So let's now transition a little bit. So we've kind of processed why we love it so much, why we think it's special. Now let's transition and kind of expand this a little bit. I'm curious why you think CCPT works. So we understand that we have to live these things, that actually becomes a part of us, right? It creates this special dynamic, and we can agree on all of those things. How does that convey to why it actually is effective?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it, a huge part of it, is that that we don't come in with an agenda, right? So when you're working with children, I always think they're all mandated. There's not like many 9-year-olds that are like, hey, I could really use a counselor or play therapist right now, right? So we never really know from the child's perspective what they want out of counseling, what their healing parts need. And so I think because you come in without an agenda, that you get to see that, and that we get to see the child's perspective, the way that they navigate the world, how they make sense of themselves, their community, their family, all of those kinds of things. And I think when we do that, then we have a level of seeing them and a level of hearing them that's where the healing, the growth, the becoming whole all happen because of that. Otherwise, I realize, who I'm talking to an extent, but it also feels a little like grandiose saying this, is that they don't get that. Like, they don't get that anywhere else. They don't get that. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't get it in school. They don't get it at home, quite frankly, unless their parents have had filial training, right? Like, they usually just don't get that. And so, and I think for me, where I really see that is in those pause responses that children have in play therapy, when you're like, nailed it, because you are able to respond to them in a way that they have never been responded to before. I can give an example, because for me, this one is so poignant. Many years ago, I was working with a child who had a sibling who had cancer. And this required the entire family to rally, obviously, around this child. But this was her sister, and it really got in the way of people seeing her, hearing mm-hmm. her, recognizing that she still had needs too. And so this 8-year-old in her very first session walks in and says, "My sister is so annoying. She has cancer." And I just went like, oh, "And you hate her for it?" And she's like, "I do." And like, no one else is saying that to that kid. That's her lived experience, is that as much as she loves her sister, she also hates that she hates the cancer part, but that nobody's saying that to that child. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, that for so much about what works is that's what we do, is that we see them, we hear them.
Right. And obviously, we can go back historically and see the evolution of this, right? So, and for most of my audience, this should be known. So I'm trusting that you all are nodding your heads as I'm saying this. But so we look at Rogers, and we look at person-centered, and mm-hmm. we understand the philosophy of self-actualization. Mm-hmm. And then we expand that to child-centered, and we say no child wants to stay stuck in any state of dysregulation.
Right.
So if we believe that, if we can all come together and say, yes, that is my view of the world, mm-hmm. then the only way to let a child heal is to give them the time, the tools, and the opportunity to do so. And that's child-centeredness. Because if we believe they will become the best version of themselves that they can be, and they don't want to stay stuck, they don't choose to stay dysregulated. She doesn't want to continue to resent and hate her sister. Yeah. She doesn't want to continue to be angry that her sister has something over which she has no control, but she's stuck there. Mm-hmm. But if we give her the time, the tools, and the opportunity, all of a sudden now there's the self-actualization process unfolding, and kids are better for it. Because if we came in and said, let's talk about your feelings about feeling ignored, let's discuss your anger towards your sister, that is a band-aid over the wound. And what about a year from now, when another situation arises, not related to sister, not related to cancer, and she still feels invisible, she still feels resentful, she still feels betrayed in some capacity? What we did in that moment to address that one problem was isolated, and there's no long-term impact. But when a child works through their own, I'm going to be a better version of myself. And we have the universal outcomes that they acquire too, right? As they build emotional vocabulary, as they build self-esteem, as they build worldview. Now, all of a sudden, that carries into that next year. And then they are equipped and they have coping and they are resilient and all the things that they need. So I think not only is it we hear them and we honor them and we value them, I think it truly is the most respectful thing that we can do to honor a child's own awareness and process. Mm-hmm. Because anything else makes it what we think should happen. Yeah. And exactly. I think being respectful and honoring, you know what you need. Let me just get out of your way and serve as a guide rail for you. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, everything takes off. I think there's so much beauty in that.
There, you know, I think so too. I think that there's a lot of hubris taken by a lot of people under the auspice of being a helping professional, saying like, I know what you need. And I think one of the things that we do that is so incredible, and many of us have no other experience of this in our lives too, is that in the child-centered play therapy moments, children are experiencing both authenticity and acceptance. They get to be themselves and they get that part to be accepted, where I'm not sure where else that happens. I think it happens. There's a reciprocity of it too, because they also authentically, I can be authentic and be accepted as well. And I think that goes back to, you know, what some of your supervisees said about noticing their own healing. It's because of that, the reciprocity of that relationship. Not that we do it for that, but that's just a natural consequence, a beautiful natural consequence of it.
Sure. Yeah. Just the happy byproduct.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing. Oh my gosh. I love it. So let's hear a little bit about, because I think once you kind of find child-centeredness and once you get settled into that, or maybe once it finds you and you get settled into it, either way, I think we all tend to find ourselves in a specialty within a specialty of sorts. Yeah. So, you know, there's so many little niches that come out of the child-centered world. And I know yours is trauma. So if you can give us a little bit of how you got into working with children that have experienced trauma and what that looks like practically speaking in your practice and in your work, and just kind of, because I know that while not all child-centered play therapists have that specific population, I mean, we get it here and there at the center, but it's not something that we specialize in. And then I know, obviously there are those that do, like Eliana Gill, et cetera. So I know that it will depend on, you know, the populations and things, but I think knowing how to handle and understand how the child-centered process works with children that come from a trauma background, I think that would be so helpful. So just kind of unpack that for us.
Okay. I'll do the quick kind of version of it, but I still, one of the things that I think is really important is to recognize, like, there's no way you're not working with traumatized children. Like, if you're working with children, you're working with traumatized children. I'll be even more specific. You're working with sexually traumatized children. So whether it's your specialty or not, it's important that you have that, you have what it takes to be able to hear, see, unsilence that in the children that you work with.
Right.
That's part of why I think the child-centered approach to working with traumatized and, you know, in particular, sexual traumatized children is so important and so valuable, because I'm essentially saying, like you can show me what you need to show me. You can tell me what you need to tell me. You can communicate what all the things, and I am going to be okay with that. I am not going to try and take you down any kind of road. I'm not going to try to get you to tell me more. I am not going to try to reframe any of this. I am just going to be able to sit here and give you the voice that was taken away from you. So, how did I get here was the very first child who I had for as a referral for child-centered play therapy was a severely sexually traumatized kid. And I was like,
Your very first one?
Very first one. Yeah.
Wow. You're thrown into the fire, Josh.
That's right. And again, I think that, like, that's who was supposed to be there, right? That was she was my teacher. Oh boy, did she teach me limit setting, among other things, but she taught me all these things. And I really do think that every, I would say, client that we work with, regardless of age, is a teacher. in that way. So she was there to teach me to shore up my child-centered play therapy skills and said, what are you going to do when I walk on your windowsill? What are you going to do when I dump this water in your crotch? What are you going to do when I make sexual noises and, you know, things like that. So she was this incredible teacher. And then, you know, over the years have really gone into, you know, like all of the other kind of paths that I could go down with traumatized children. And I keep going like, no, this doesn't feel right. That isn't right. We are asking children, especially who've experienced any kind of interpersonal trauma, it feels like all of these, which might be a bit of an exaggeration, but all of these alternative paths to child-centered approaches feel like I am all about power and control, that the child is now, I am making, in particular, a sexually traumatized kid do something they don't want to do. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to have to, you know, create a particular art project. They don't want to. And so what I find is that when that is taken away, when you give them, here it is, here's some control back, grapple with it, here's some power back, here's trusting yourself back, all of those things, is that then that unfolds in the child-centered approach. And a caveat to that is I think a lot of us miss it. So my experience with, you know, my supervisees and students is, even with that child-centered training and a strong foundation, is that we don't want to see it. We don't want to, like, this kid was referred because of divorce and separation. This kid was referred for perfectionism. I don't want to see it. And so sometimes, you know, I think because of that, because we care so much about the children that we work with, is that we miss many of the red flags. And so I look back to my very first teacher, that little six-year-old that I worked with, and think about, you know, and this was something you said earlier, Brenna, about people like doing this as like a second or a third, like, specialty or, you know, area. And I think for what happens a lot of times when I'm doing trainings on specifically to working with children who've experienced interpersonal trauma, is I get this view of people where I can see that they are literally going through their client list. Oh my gosh, I missed that. Oh my gosh, I missed that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just think the child-centered approach provides this, like, there's no way you don't provide a sense of safety. There's no way you don't provide a sense of, you do have power and control, acceptance, all the things that we do that are just part of that child-centered philosophy are all the healing components for traumatized people. So it actually baffles me how you would do anything else. Also, and I am unapologetic about this, is one, we don't, like, just telling your story is not healing.
Right.
Like, in and of itself, that is not healing. And then two is I've been trained in TFCBT. I have never, student sessions, in watching sessions of supervisees, I have literally never seen it work. I know it must because it's evidence-based, but I have never seen that happen.
Yes. So we'll save that for another interview. But so everyone that knows me knows how I feel about that. But so let me circle back to trauma. So I feel... But that goes with it, right? Because this is why this podcast exists. This is why my listeners are so passionate and invested in what I'm doing. This is why the collective exists. This is why the coaching programs exist. This is why your supervision style exists, the way that you teach. Because once you get it, once you understand it, and once there's an inherent love and deep-rooted faith in it, mm-hmm. you can't justify any other approach. I've tried to be diplomatic. I've tried to say, well, maybe I just don't know enough about it, or maybe I need to see what it's like, or maybe I need to watch it in action, or maybe I need to read a different book, and I can do all of those things until I'm blue in the face. But the reality is, I see the evidence of the child-centered model in my playroom every day. See it work. I see the magic of it. I see the beauty of it. I see the healing that takes place. I see the change and the growth and the shifts. And then when I look at all of the other options, again, it must work. Maybe, but I've never experienced it personally either. And so therefore, and here's what I know, because I have thousands of people that reach out to me and there's woven threads through every story, right? Mm-hmm. And what I see again and again and again is I've been eclectic. I've been, you know, incorporating all of these different things. I've been an integrative play therapist. I do some child-centered. I do some directive. I do some this. I do some that. But why do they come to the child-centered model? Because it's the only thing that truly makes sense and works. And I hear that over and over and over again. Yeah. I was trying all these things. I was confused. I was frustrated. My kids were frustrated. My kids were confused. None of us were happy. We didn't see the effects that we wanted. We didn't see the outcomes we were hoping for. And all of us were just in a frustrated mess. But now all of a sudden, child-centered is giving me a framework and I'm seeing change and I'm seeing happiness and I'm seeing all these good things. Wow. And yeah. So this, you know, in light of trauma, and I think that actually was really insightful for me, what you just said a second ago.
Oh, good.
When I was thinking about what a child has gone through mm-hmm. when they have been traumatized, they have had no power. They've had no control. They've had no one validate them. They've had no one understand. They've had no one be there for them. They've had no one sit with them. They've had no one, all of the things that we do for kids.
Right.
That is what has been robbed of kids that have been traumatized. Exactly. So what an incredible gift to sit in a room with a child and let them play and say, hey, I'm going to provide, not uniquely to you, I'm going to do this with every kid that walks through the room, but I'm going to provide you everything that you need and want and have missed and have lost and have had taken from you so that you feel safe enough to do the healing work that you need to do.
Yeah. And let me just add one more caveat to that is, we also believe them. And when you work with adults, and I work with adults and teenagers as well, is that when they were sexually abused as children, my adult and teenagers say, and have said, and said, and said, and said, the not being believed was the worst part. And so when I have a kid, this is one of my favorite, this 9-year-old boy that I work with came into the playroom, told me all about how he had a pet penguin and was born in Antarctica. And I said, oh my gosh, there's so many special things about you. I did not challenge that perhaps was not a true story. But I believed him. And that in and of itself is like, he's not manipulating me. He's not trying to pull one over on me. He's testing me. He's saying, will you believe the stories I tell you? And when we don't have a way of allowing for children to be believed, regardless of what they tell us, they are not going to share about their trauma in any way, shape, or form. And so it is inherent to the child-centered play therapy practice that we are providing these things for traumatized children. And I am also lucky enough, because I've been in the field for a while and in the same community, to work with teenagers and adults who I worked with as children. And this was just the other day, who I worked with as a child was saying, and now she's 19, she said, remember when I was little? Yes, I do. And she said, I don't remember what we played. I remember the playroom. And she said, what I do remember, though, is that you believed me. No one else did. And that means, and, you know, obviously, as child-centered play therapists, we would never be like, I believe you, but we convey it. And that's what she felt. And that's what she took with her. You know, the 15 years in between the time I saw her when she was little and seeing her now, that's what we're doing. We're not going to hear it from the children, but if you're lucky enough to work in the same community, you may hear it from adults and teenagers. Yeah.
What an incredible gift. And, you know, I talk to my audience about this a lot. This is hard work. And this is a hard field. It can be really, really overwhelming at times. And it's emotionally draining. It's mentally draining. It's psychologically draining. Sometimes it's physically draining. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we run the gamut of fatigue, right? But I try to reinforce this all the time. There's nothing in the world I would rather do. Nothing. Like it is in equal parts absolutely draining and absolutely uplifting and fulfilling and rewarding. And it's like everything that shouldn't exist in the same thing because they're opposites, right? And I talk about all the time the gifts that we are able to give to the children that come into our playrooms. And you just identified it. Sometimes we don't even know what those gifts are. We might not ever be told this was what this meant to me. This was how this helped me. This is what I took away from this, but it's there. And we know that it's there because we know about the relationship and the work that's taking place in there. And I think that the gift that we are able to not only give to kids, but the gifts that they give us in return, it is such a special thing.
And I think that's why, we can be talking about this. Oh, this is not a fun topic, right? Talking about traumatized children, but we both sit here energized and with smiles on our face. And that's because we know about the gifts that we are able to share and just with those children. And that's where the hope is, right? That we practice and approach a way of being with children that has hope instilled in it. And parents feel that, children feel that. That makes a difference.
It does. And I think so often, you know, because we've both been doing this for decades, right? And I think so often back to some of my first clients. Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, how old would they be now? And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're 30. And you know, and so then I'm going, oh my word. Okay, so possibly married now, possibly with children now, possibly, you know, career person doing incredible things. And I just think, I wonder what life is like for them now and what they tie back to the time that they spent in a child-centered playroom. And not specifically with me, just going through the process of child-centered play therapy, I wonder what carries over. I wonder what they recall. I wonder what they would say, you know, this is what I remember, and this is what made me happy, and this was what was significant to me. They take those things with them, and it's long-lasting implications for the rest of their lives.
And I think we have a snapshot to that. And I am 100% sure you've had this experience with your, with your tribe, is that I will regularly have students or supervisees. There's just something you see in them. And I think this goes back to an earlier part of our conversation where you recognize they didn't have a them, right? You didn't have a Brenna. I didn't have a Jody. And I can feel that. You know, too, is that I think that's how we know the trajectory post this experience is so profound, because we can feel what it may have been like, a little bit, right, of what it may have been like to have somebody that isn't even part of our family believe us, accept us for who we are, right, allow us to be our authentic selves, that, you know, so many of us to not have that experience.
Right. And there's so much there, right? Right. And we could talk for 7 more hours. All right. Oh my gosh. Well, what an incredible opportunity to chat with you. I'm really, truly grateful for your sharing and your honesty and your transparency. And, you know, I joke all the time with my listeners and my collective folk that when you're with your people, it's just the best feeling. And, you know, to know that you have like-mindedness and you get it and, you know, you're on the same page with the child-centered philosophy. It truly is just fun to be around people that you can just resonate and click with. So it's always so much fun to be with you. And I'm really, really grateful to have had a chance to chat with you.
Yeah. Same here. The collective spark is pretty profound. So thank you, Brenna.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, I really am so grateful to have you. And for my listeners, we're actually going to do kind of a part two of this interview. So this will also kind of segue into some supervision discussion. And I'm really looking forward to that. So thanks so much for being here today. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.